Hello, everyone. This is Jared Director, President of Columbia Omni Corp and Columbia Omni Studio. Welcome to Columbia Omni Live. This is where we will bring you the latest insider look into the fashion and color industry while we all reimagine this new world we live in. Enjoy this episode and don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date with future episodes. Also, give us a follow on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to see what creative projects we are helping our customers with. Thank you very much and stay safe.
Okay, we are live. Thank you very much all for coming. This is Columbia Omni Studio, our expert interview series. And today we used to have Lee, who is the head of marketing for Kornit. And we'll get into what Kornit is in a little bit. Scott and I worked together at Pantone. He was there for about 5 years. In the early 2000s, and he was head of product marketing, product management for the graphics line at that time. And I've always had a great deal of respect professionally for Scott, and our paths have merged again, and he's now back in the textile business.
Yes, sir.
So my condolences to you for that. But I'm interested, you know, we haven't talked in a number of years, so I was interested to hear a little bit about your career path. I guess where you were before Pantone, and specifically between Pantone and Kornit, and what got you there.
Sure. Well, first, I want to say it's great to see you again, Mitch. Thanks for inviting me. It's quite a pleasure to be here live on the air with you today. So,
thank you.
Appreciate that. Yeah. So my path to Kornit on the surface wasn't real linear. I was in a voiceover IP software. I was at Pantone. I was at enterprise software for price optimization solutions. And then in LED lighting. So it was kind of all over the place. Every 5 years or so, kind of got that itch and stepped out and was looking for something new. But if you scratch beneath the surface, I guess, a little bit, and you think about it, there was a common thread between all of the businesses that I've worked with. They're all small to mid-sized type companies. And a lot of them had this a solution, product, a service that was in the early adoption phase of the life cycle. And Kornit now, even though the company's been around since 2002, we're really at this point now where the technology and the solutions are ready for prime time. Lots of early adopters are using the product, but the industry is about to explode. And that's what jazzes me up every morning when I get up, building a marketing team and the infrastructure that can scale with the business and align with the growth that we're about to experience.
So tell us about Kornit, I guess I was mispronouncing it. What does it do? What do you make? I mean, I know, but I want the audience to know.
Yeah, well, when I interviewed for the company, and I've only been there for a year, actually my anniversary is coming up tomorrow on the 16th of September. I interviewed with the president of our region, and I called it Kornit as well. And I called it Kornit about three times during our discussion. He had to correct me three times. So finally learned that it is pronounced Kornit. So as I mentioned, the company's been around for a while. It's an Israeli-based company, been around since the early 2000s, about the time that you and I started at Pantone. And they produce industrial grade direct to garment printers. So it's an inkjet technology and prints directly onto fabrics, just about any type of fabric. We can talk more specifics a little bit later. But it's a global company. It's grown quite a bit. We have 600 employees today. Their IPO was about 4 years ago, I believe. And so it's a public company now. The stock's doing very well with our growth recently. And we have offices in Asia, Europe, Israel, HQ, and then here in New Jersey is the North American headquarters.
It, It's made in Israel, correct?
Yeah, all of our systems, as we call them, they're printers, really industrial grade printers, pretty large. Everything's made in Israel. We have some components that come from Asia. So during the last 6 months or so, with the virus disruption in the supply chain, there were some components that we had trouble getting. But for the large part, production was smooth and seamless throughout the pandemic. And shipments around the world have not really stopped much. Hasn't been much disruption in production or shipping of the products. Our ink sets are also made in Israel as well. So everything is under one roof. We're vertically integrated, and we make the consumables as well as the printers themselves.
And do we have a free trade agreement with Israel?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. So that's nice.
Yes, and we didn't get tagged with the tariffs over the past few years either.
Right. So you were talking about direct-to-garment. Those machines almost look like a screen printer, right? But they're digital. You know, they have the carousel around it. They have the garment kind of slides onto that base.
Well, some of them do. Some of our competitors actually have something that looks like a carousel. Ours are actually overblown desktop inkjet printers. I mean, they're huge, but they have two pallets. Most of them do. And so you can do two shirts at a time, two garments at a time. On the DTG side of things, we can talk about the DTF as well, which is a different system and solution altogether. But yeah, they're just overblown inkjet printers. What makes Kornit's solution unique and really our IP that differentiates us from everybody else in the market is that we have an inline pre-treatment solution. So rather than having to pre-treat the garments externally before you print on them, everything happens in line. Slide the shirt in, gets pre-treated just on the areas that are going to be printed on, so you're not wasting any of the pre-treat. And they wanted to. Typically, our customers use a long dryer, which allows more garments to dry at simultaneously for higher production. And you're good to go. So it's pre-treat, print to the dryer to cure.
So it's just the dryer to cure. Because weren't there really elaborate curing machines?
Yeah, it's mostly heat-based. There's different things that different solutions use to cure. The heat press is, you've probably seen those at your t-shirt shops down on the boardwalk. They'll use transfer paper, or they'll print on a DTG type machine similar to Kornit's and then cure the ink by pressing it with heat. There's some flash curing as well, or just the long belt dryer that our customers typically use. They're fairly long, very consistent in their heat. And you can dry 40 shirts at the same time. As it goes through the belt, it takes about 5 minutes, 10 minutes to go through the belt.
And what's a typical garment that uses this? It's not going to be done on t-shirts, right? Because that's t-shirts.
Lots and lots of t-shirts. In fact, I mean that's the bulk of the garments that are being decorated with our technology, our t-shirts. I mean, what's driving this business right now is there's a few trends, but the major trend is e-commerce, for sure. Everyone wants to buy everything online. Obviously, over the past 6 months or so, that's just accelerated the movement toward the online shopping mode. Even, you know, seniors are doing the bulk of their shopping online now, and you had no place else to shop, right, especially for clothing. So that's a big driver. And the reason it's a driver is that with digital printing technology, it's no longer cost prohibitive to print one-offs.
Right.
If you're a screen printer and if you're ordering t-shirts from a screen printer, what's the first thing they say? How many? And, you know, what's the minimum order quantity? Because they have to make it cost effective. It costs a lot of money and time, mostly, to produce the screens that are necessary to produce t-shirts through screen printing. So you want to get up to the 100, 200, 500 shirts in order to make it cost effective. With digital printing, you order a design from an online store like Amazon or any other front-end store. The order then goes directly to the printer. They get the file, digital file, pop it onto Corneet, print a t-shirt within 10 minutes, pop it into a box, ship it off for next day air or 2 day air, and you have your shirt. And they only printed one of them. And that one shirt costs the same as if you printed 10 shirts. Each shirt would be less than a dollar.
Wow.
So there's no scale like in screen printing. Each consecutive or successive shirt is cheaper than the one before because you're getting economies of scale.
Right. And you're not mixing ink to make that color, so you're not sitting with any ink.
Right, all of that. Yeah. So there are benefits. There's no doubt that there are benefits to screen printing, and screen printing is not going anywhere anytime soon. But today's screen printers are seeing that there's a huge opportunity for them to augment their operations with digital technology, again, to support e-commerce and shorter runs that, orders that they're getting from customers. Over time, over the past 10 years, the quantity and volume of orders has gone down dramatically. People just don't want to keep the inventory that they used to hold. I think a lot of retailers and brands got burnt over the past 6 months, holding a ton of inventory, and they learned a very hard lesson not to overorder. So again, that all ties into this trend toward shorter runs, keep your costs down, produce only what is on order, or basically print to order.
Wow. And what's like the average size business that would buy these machines?
Yeah, so our machines are industrial grade. They're on the higher end, and they're expensive, quite frankly. The entry-level machine for a Corneet, she's talking just under $200,000. That's for the machine itself. And of course, you need a dryer and the consumables along the way. So our typical customer would have annual revenue of at least $1 million a year, probably two and up. Our typical customer is somewhere that's our sweet spot would be annual revenue of $5 to $10 million. They're entrepreneurial type companies, and they see this opportunity in e-commerce, and they're going for it. They're doubling down, and so they're not huge, but they will be. They want to be the next Amazon, maybe not Amazon, but something like that.
And so, are they buying? Is it like do you kind of try to target like a screen printer? And
a big part of our marketing strategy is to educate screen printers about the technology, inform them that it's now ready for prime time. There are, screen printers that, I guess, dipped their toe in digital printing 5, 10, 15 years ago and got burnt on it because it wasn't ready for prime time then. And left a bad taste in their mouth. So it's part of my job to educate them that, it's come a long way. It is ready and ripe to take advantage of. And so it's an education process. And you just have to also target the right people and the right size company who can actually take advantage of our systems. Many, many times we'll come across smaller screen printers and they say, I'd love to buy a Corneet. Understand it's best in class, but I just can't, swing that right now. So there are other solutions on the market. Brother, Epson, some big names in printing technology have machines that you can get, for $20,000-$25,000, which is a lot easier to swallow than $200,000. We understand that. So we made a conscious decision as an organization in terms of our go-to-market strategy to really focus on the higher end, higher volume side of the market, but there are smaller systems for those who just want to get started in the technology, and then we hope to see them down the road a bit when they grow their business.
Yeah, right. you touched on bringing files, taking a file and put it in your Corny. How does that work? How does a designer work with one of those machines? Is it software that comes with the machine, or?
Yeah, so we do have a RIP that comes with, and a full management system that comes with the machine. But we also work with some strategic partners. If, for instance, there's a company called ColorGate. ColorGate offers a more sophisticated RIP than what we offer standard off the shelf with our systems. And you would use ColorGate if you had more sophisticated color management requirements for your jobs, typically, Pantone matching and such. But ours right out of the box is simple to use. It's, the designer is encouraged to design within the CMYK color gamut and then save the file as RGB. We accept pings, TIFFs, whatever, and just basically upload it into the machine and print the shirt. Like I said, if there's not a lot of touch-up and pre-press that needs to happen on the file, because maybe the file wasn't produced properly, we get a properly produced file, pop it on the machine, get a T-shirt out within 10 minutes.
Wow. So tell us about color a little bit. This is largely a color crowd. Okay. And most of our previous interviews have been regarding color. But I thought this was a great topic because it's new, and it's, I don't think a lot of people really do know about it yet. But so you said the color, you can reproduce Pantone colors. I'm assuming probably PMS colors.
Mm-hmm. And our machines are all processed. So we have CMYK machines plus white, and then, but our newer machines are six color plus white.
Okay. So they're going to be fairly limited gamut wise for designer, right?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, the six color gamut is pretty wide, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
But in terms of spot colors, it's going to be a processed color. It's going to be the best simulation of a spot color that we can come up with. And like I was saying, the ColorGate RIP will help but system operators hit those colors more accurately than some of the other RIPs on the market.
Right.
Screen printing does a very good job of matching spot colors. And that's right. Really, if you have a corporate color that you're trying to match on a garment, I would recommend, and it's really critical you hit that. Screen printing is probably the way to go. But there are other advantages to digital printing in terms of the gamut and the color selection. Gradations of color that you can achieve with our system is greater than you could through the screen process. Again, a six color design on a T-shirt with screen printing is going to take a lot of time and prep up front, putting six screens together, whereas our machine can print it out in 10 minutes. Doesn't matter how many colors there are. It's just like an inkjet printer on your desk can print just about anything.
Right. Neat. Yeah, I'm thinking about it like when you said that a six color, like if you do like a seven color extended gamut, you can reach like 95% of the PMS colors, mm-hmm. Fairly well. Yeah. And what a blessing. You don't have to mix ink to match each one of those colors.
Yeah, it hasn't been a big requirement from our customers. Color matching is on garments isn't what it was on paper. I think that although I've been out of the color game for a while now, I don't know if it falls into the same scrutiny as it did back in the day. Now when I was at Pantone, you were there. You have the color on the screen, you have the color on the paper, trying to match the two is so, almost impossible. And I don't know, are people still as color critical as they used to be? Certainly brands are, but in general, you tell me. I mean, I'll ask you the question.
Well, I think, if you were doing, the one-offs or the 10-offs or, you're not really comparing it to anything. It's not, yes, the designer gave you a color and you wanted to hit it, but probably not the end of the world if it's not right on, because it's not sitting in a store with, 10 other khakis, piled on top of it. So I think it'd probably be a little bit more forgiving in that way. But the other piece, and wanted to get to it anyway, was to talk about the directive fabric piece. And that might be more color critical than the direct to garment printing.
I think it is. So the direct to fabric is used in soft signage a lot. And if you have a corporate color and you're using soft signage at a trade show, it better hit the color, right? Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Yeah. Especially when they're talking about how good their color, you know, matching ability is. And so, yeah. But so talk about the directive fabric. What is that? How is that different? That to me is almost a little bit easier to understand because, well, first of all, my family came from the printing end of it, but also because that's rotary printing. That's traditional printing in the textile market. That's to compare against rotary printing.
Yes, that is exactly right. So it's roll to roll, DTF or direct to fabric. It's just another acronym for roll to roll textile printing.
Yeah.
And so we have just as we have the digital format for t-shirts, hoodies, and garments, you know, individual garments, we have the roll to roll solution that you print on white fabric. Right. So you don't have to keep different bolts of different colors to print on. Basically, if you want solid color, you would just print solid color onto the white fabric. So it keeps it nice and simple. It's a huge industry. I think if I get my number right here, I think it's 38 million square meters of fabric is printed a year. And most of it is done with old analog printing, old printing technologies. I think only about 2 to 5% of it today, probably closer to the 2, is done digitally. Other competitors in the marketplace who have been offering digital solutions for roll-to-roll for many years longer than Cornette. Reggiani is one of them, Durst, MS. They have good solutions out there. It's a more competitive space, especially for Cornette than on the DTG side of things. So we're kind of new entrants there.
One thing that I saw about roll-to-roll, which I thought was just great, that you could pretty much print and color a shape that would be the shape that you would cut out, you know, with your cutting devices. Yeah. So you can almost take out that piece of it. You could grade it and mark it on the computer, which I thought was just really cool.
We have a strategic partnership with Gerber. Gerber makes cutters, fabric cutters, and they have an innovation center down in Chelsea in Manhattan, where they have what they call a microfactory setup, which is really, really cool to see. And so they offer software solutions. So it's really end to end. So when a customer comes into this Gerber facility, they have a person sit around a conference room desk, and they bring the software up on the screen in the room, and they have their guests select different types of garments with sizing, necklines, hems, whatever it may be, basically picking out the garment that they would like with their special requirements. That software then sends it over to our printer, which is at the front of the microfactory line. Our printer then prints out the design. You know, you can see like the shape of the dress. It then gets cured through a dryer very quickly, goes to their cutter. The cutter then cuts everything out perfectly. The sewer takes it off of the line, sews it up, and within 2 hours, that guest who entered their facility at 9 o'clock walks out at 11 o'clock in the morning with a garment printed and sewed custom to their size and requirements. It's really, really cool.
That is cool. So will these machines ever get to the point where they can, you said that they do a solid color, but will it do it, you know, with the economies of scale that a regular rotary printer does it? Will the prices come down? Will the speeds come up?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's happening right now. It's just like it was in digital printing in paper. When I left that world, the Indigos of the world were just starting to, I think, penetrate the marketplace and grab some share. We're kind of at that point now. And just like every technology, yeah, it's going to scale. It's going to get less expensive. It's going to get faster. Right now, speed is the main issue with digital printing. Cannot match the speeds of analog printing.
Yeah.
It's more for on-demand types of scenarios, one-offs, short runs, very custom work.
Yeah. So we had, I don't know if you ever met Keith Hoover. He was at Under Armour. He was at, you know, real color guru and real kind of a trendsetter technology-wise in color. But his idea, and I'm sure it was others at Under Armour, really thought that one of the keys to bringing the business back to the U.S. was to have the manufacturing close to where the product was going to be purchased. And yeah, this kind of fits into that because you could have, you know, you could have one of these machines, you know, in every state or whatever, and, you know, make the garments and get them to the store very quickly. So it's not just that, you know, that the stuff can be produced digitally, but it could also be produced digitally really close to where it's going to be used. And there's, you know, the economies in that are really interesting too.
Proximity production is a big driver. There's no doubt about it. And that is, it just makes more sense now. I think in the fashion world, because the DTF or roll-to-roll really is for soft signage and fashion types of scenarios. And so I think what I've heard quoted is from design to production to actually selling a garment back in the day was like a 6 to 8 month process.
Yeah, probably.
And now, you know, with proximity production using this type of technology, I mean, you can shrink that to days, literally to days.
Right.
You know, the Zaras of the world with fast fashion, they're changing their inventory in their stores every 2 weeks, I think, if not more.
Yeah.
So everything is just accelerated right now. You just don't have the time to wait for a slow boat from China to get over here, you know? And if you can make it economical and fast, because, you know, what's driving the market today is, I said, e-commerce, social media, huge, right? Self-expression and sustainability. All those things tie into proximity production. Somebody sees something on Instagram or TikTok these days, as my daughter and probably yours as well are on TikTok all the time.
Oh, yeah.
They see somebody wearing something. They want it now. They go online. They take a look to see if they can find that specific design on a shirt or whatever it may be. And they want it. You know, there's no time. There's no time to wait. And you better be able to have the wherewithal to get that design or that garment into their hands as quickly as possible. You're going to lose the business.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. But the big bugaboo about that type of location proximity manufacturing was always that, at least in this business, there's not enough people who know how to sew anymore.
Funny. Yeah. You know, that. So it's interesting. I was just on a call with our sales team earlier today, and that was a topic that came up. We're trying to, you know, market our Presto system, which is our DTF solution in the United States. And there's lots of interest in it for that microfactory type of scenario. They see the benefit of it, but they just can't find people to sew.
Yeah.
So we're actually looking into contract sewing businesses across the United States that we can offer in our sales pitches to customers and say, listen, we've got these solutions that you can use on the back end to bring it all together end to end. Because that's where it kind of falls apart right now, at least in North America.
Yeah. Interesting. So I was always under the impression for the digital printing that there was only certain kind of fabrics that could be used or they had to be pre-treated. You're saying that now they have that you have your own pre-treatment Does that mean you could do any fabric across the board or?
Yeah, so we have three ink sets. Well, we can for the most part. I mean, a garment needs to be able to, or fabric needs to be able to receive ink. You can't really print on rubber, but for the most part, we can print on just about any fabric. We have three different ink sets, one for the Presto, which is DTF, one for our general DTG machines, which we were talking about earlier in the discussion, printing on T-shirts and hoodies and that type of thing. Then we have a specialized system that is designed to print specifically in 100% polyester. And that's a DTG machine, but it's geared toward 100% polyester. We have a different ink set for that. So we're as much a chemistry company as we are a manufacturer of printing machines. Yeah. Because it really all comes down to the chemistry. And we develop our own inks. We develop our own pre-treatment, which we call fixation, and obviously the machines as well. We have the only system really that can consistently print on dark polyester. You know, sublimation is a printing technology that's been used for years to print on polyester and does a wonderful job, but light polyester. You can screen print on darker polyester, but it takes special inks and additives and special touch of the operator to get it done right. Because the biggest issue with darker polyesters is something called dye migration. So you print on top of this dark fabric, and then over time, the darker dye from the fabric itself starts seeping up in through or wicking up into the ink, and the design doesn't look the same. So yeah, we have this unique technology. It's called the PolyPro that does a terrific job of printing on 100% polyester, and that's a special ink set. And we actually lay down a layer of white base first, either one or two hits with white, and then we print on top of that.
Kind of like an ink printer.
Yeah. But it works.
Isn't there, I don't know if this still holds true, but that there was some science behind the dot itself, that it doesn't spread when it hits the fabric.
Exactly. Yeah. Good. Wow. You know your stuff.
Virtual.
It's kind of cool. We have a demo center in our facility in Englewood, New Jersey, where we do a lot of samples for customers before they purchase the system. A lot of them want us to run all kinds of crazy samples for them to demonstrate the capabilities of the machine. But back there, we have our ink, of course, which is very, very watery. It's not thick at all. And we have a cup of water, and we have a clear cup of our fixation, which is that bonding agent or the pretreatment. If you take an eyedropper of the ink and you drop it into the water, it's like food dye. It just circles around, and the water turns whatever color the ink is. You take an eyedropper of the ink and you drop it in, drop by drop, into the fixation, and they turn into these little gelatin balls. You know, they ball up real quick as soon as they touch that fixation. So what happens is when you pre-treat the garment in our systems, and then you drop the ink, the small dots of ink, through inkjet technology on top of that, the fixation keeps that little ball of ink in place. That's why we call it fixation. It fixes it in place. And it fixes it in place enough where you can take the garment off of the pallet, hold it vertical, nothing drips, and then you lay it down onto the dryer, it runs through the dryer, and everything is bonded perfectly well, and it's basically color fast for hundreds of washes. We wash test everything that we do in our demo center. But it's chemistry again. So there are different recipes for different types of garments. You know, if you're printing on an 80-20 versus 60-40 blend, those things need to be tweaked a bit in order to get the best results. And we have, you know, experts and engineers that are always working with customers to make sure that they're tweaking their systems to get the best results possible. But that fixation and the curing, if it's done right, I mean, you can wash the garment 500 times and you won't tell the difference.
So you bring up color fastness, and I was going to ask you about, you know, compared to rotary printing, how does the fabric differ? How is the hand? How is the color fastness?
Yeah. Color fastness is on par. Up until about 6 months ago, the big knock on at least our DTF solution, I can't speak to the competitors, was hand feel. You know, it looked wonderful to the eye, but when you were at one of our trade shows and we had our samples of, roll-to-roll printing samples on display, what we heard most often was, oh, that doesn't have the same feel as the analog. I want that same feel. So fortunately, about 6 months ago, we came out with a new product introduction that could be added to the Presto machine, which is our roll-to-roll machine, and it's a softener. So it's an inline softener, just like our pre-treatment is inline with the color. It's just another row of print heads that applies softener at the same time it's dropping the droplets of ink onto the fabric. And if hand feel, you'd never know the difference. You couldn't tell the difference between analog printed fabric versus DTF. You could guess, but you'd never, I don't think that you'd actually feel a difference. So that's a recent advancement in the technology that's made a big difference in the appeal of our technology to those who are printing for the fashion industry.
Yeah. Hand would be a big thing. And I think when digital printing first came out, that was an issue because of the treatments and whatnot.
Yep, true.
Interesting. Cool.
Not so much anymore, though.
Yeah.
Across the board, for the most part, the hand feel is not such a problem. Yeah, and then, you've got that, and you probably had shirts like this that have that plastisol type of ink. That's kind of an old technology that's been used and it's still used a bit as well. And I mean, talk about horrible hand feel.
Didn't stop anybody from buying at concerts.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, you'll have nothing like that with any of the digital technology that I've seen today, whether it's ours or anybody else's.
Interesting. So how does sustainability figure into all of this? I see places where it would definitely be an advantage, but you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, textile manufacturing is the number two most polluting industry in the world. I mean, obviously fossil fuel, petroleum. And we've all probably seen the pictures from, India, China, probably mostly India, of rivers, running with color just from all the dyeing.
Yeah.
So there's no dyeing in digital, printing to fabric. There's no rinsing. That's the big polluter. So when you're dyeing fabric and you have to rinse it and you have to rinse it over and over again, it's polluting the water. It's using a lot of water, which is precious in a lot of areas of the world. And for the most part, we eliminate that process. There's really no water that's used in our process whatsoever on the DTF side of things. Mm-hmm. On DTG, of course, you've ever been to a screen printing facility, it's not the cleanest place in the world. It's not just the inks, but it's the solvents that they use to clean the screens so that they can repurpose the screens on another run. There's a lot of chemicals that are used in the process. So we eliminate all of that. Our inks are water-based. There's no solvents involved. Even our fixation, which is the pretreatment, is non-toxic. In fact, one of the knocks on our pretreatment for years is that it smelled like vinegar. It's because it was a kind of a form of vinegar. And in fact, you could actually, I wouldn't recommend drinking it, but you could and not die. But in recent years, we have neutralized that the smell of it, so it doesn't smell at all like vinegar anymore, but chemically, it's still similar to that. So it's all non-toxic, environmentally friendly, and you could actually drink a couple of ounces of it without having any adverse effects.
And plus, when you were saying like the one-off, there's no waste of, very little waste of garments, hopefully.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, Burberry, a couple of years ago, the big article was, I think, that they burned $37 million worth of garments. And you're like, why?
I think it was H&M. And that, but, I thought that was the beginning of the end for the fast fashion industry, but no effect.
No. But yeah, it's very, very wasteful. And until it makes economic sense, you won't see them implement sustainable technologies. But it is starting to get there. And I think more importantly, the social movements that are in place now, especially with our millennials and Gen Zs, they want to know how their clothing was made. You know, the Patagonias of the world are made it into a great marketing campaign. And you know, once the market starts demanding that type of sustainable manufacturing in their clothing, which they will, then you're going to see a major turn in the way things are made.
Yeah, Patagonia does it best.
Yeah,
Eileen Fisher is also good, you know, about that.
I mean, we envision a world, and as a marketer, that would be marketing Nirvana, if brands, and this is somewhat feasible in my world, would want to actually say Corn Eaton side type of, you know, the Intel inside kind of approach, where they're telling their end users that Corn Eaton technology was used to print their garment, and that would add value to the garment because the consumer would then know that it was made in a sustainable fashion.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, right?
We'll see. I'm working toward it.
Keep working. Are there any plans to do any kind of mobile design ability? You could do it off your phone or an iPad.
Yeah, I guess. So we just acquired a company called Custom Gateway in mid-August, because one of the things that we were lacking in terms of a real end-to-end solution was the workflow side of things. You know, we had the great ink technology and the systems, but to get a file from point A to point B and then from point B out the door in the shipment is not something that a solution that we offered. So we acquired Custom Gateway. They have a full end-to-end solution that integrates directly with our system now, makes starting up an online store pretty much turnkey now for our customers. You don't have to plug and play with a bunch of different integrations, technological integrations, to make it all happen right out of the box. It's pretty seamless right now. I could see Custom Gateway moving towards some sort of mobile design, but they don't have it available today. But certainly that's something that makes sense maybe moving forward.
Mm-hmm. What do you, just in a general question, what do you see that more companies should be doing that they're not doing now, besides buying a bunch of these things?
I don't know. I'm not in the business of telling companies what they should be doing, but I mean,
that's because you're not in sales.
That's right. That's why I never made it in sales, Mitch. You know what they say about marketing guys. Marketing people are just guys that couldn't make it in sales.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I don't know. When I see these stories about the waste that's going on out there and large brands that I have a lot of respect for and just how wasteful they are, and even some of the corporate social irresponsibility that I hear about the way they treat people in different parts of the world manufacturing garments. I just like to see, both from a social standpoint and from an environmental standpoint, just a more sustainable approach to making garments for people. It doesn't have to be wasteful. It doesn't have to be harmful.
Yeah, that's a good thing to wish for. So somebody looking at this and says, you know, I want to get into this business. What do you think the amount of money that they would have to have to get into it in a smart way?
You got to ask yourself a couple of questions as a business. Does it fit your business model? Are you the type of business that sees e-commerce, customized garments, even higher volume mass customization as being part of your business model moving forward? Is that where you're going as a business? If not, then there's no reason today to get into digital printing technology. You know, stick with your analog. It's a high volume approach to things. So if, though, e-commerce makes sense to you, you see that the market trends are driving toward shorter runs and one-offs, then you definitely should consider digital technology. But depending on the size of your business, really depends on what your entry point is. Again, you know, there are solutions on the market that are viable for everyone from a 1 to 2 person operation from the garage right on up to a large type of Printful, you know, business. Printful is one of our largest customers, and they're enormous, and they do a tremendous amount of digital printing. So there's a solution for everyone, you know, in between those two scenarios. But before you get into it, definitely run samples. Make sure that whatever vendor you're considering produces samples that are consistent with what you intend to produce on the machine. Make sure that they can produce it with consistency, high quality, and that they can tell you how they achieved it with a transparent approach. And go for it. And don't look back. We have lots of customers who have, and they profited quite well.
Yeah, I bet they have. So you think, like, overall, the pandemic was not that it was good for your business, but it didn't hurt your business too much, because...
It's interesting what we have seen. It's actually accelerated our business. I'm not going to say that it's helped our business, because I don't know if the acceleration is temporary or not. But our larger customers have leaned in quite considerably during this time period, because the typical peak season for our customers is from, you know, back to school time right on through the holidays. You know, that's when they're running at, you know, double shifts, 7 days a week. Many of them started running at that level back in May, because they were picking up the slack for other smaller printers, unfortunately, that just couldn't reopen. So when they had that, you know, they didn't have the capacity to meet the demand, they came to us and they were ordering more systems to increase their capacity. So we were selling a lot of systems during that period, but they were from existing customers.
Right.
What's yet to be determined is if all boats are going to rise in the coming year or so. And we think that they will, as more companies come back online and those who have the wherewithal to invest in their business and see the trends that have been accelerated through the pandemic, the trends that we've talked about through this discussion, you know, is how that's transforming the industry, and that they need to be in a different place in a year from now in order to meet the demand that those trends are driving, that they will then also consider getting into the business. So that's our hope. There are indications that that's occurring. But, you know, the pandemic's a very unpredictable thing, and it's impacting people in all types of different ways, and financially for sure. And, you know, difficult time for many.
Yep.
Uncertain time for us.
Yep. What do you think? Has there been any lessons that companies have learned from the pandemic that will stay with us post-pandemic?
Well, for sure, the inventory lesson, I think, was learned by a lot.
Yeah.
So, brands that only, they were kind of stubborn and would only sell their product through retail outlets got burnt pretty bad. There were good reasons why. You know, they wanted to maintain their brand experience, and they didn't want to sell their products through online marketplaces. I get that. But I think the lesson learned there was that they need to diversify in their distribution channels for sure. Limit the amount of inventory exposure that they have for sure. And just, I think, looking back for most businesses is, I mean, it sounds cliche, but you have to stay nimble, right? You always have to build your business with the understanding that anything can happen at any time, and maintain those resources that allow you to pivot very quickly when something happens.
And
we found that those businesses that were able to, whether it was pivoting from making aprons or God knows what, to making masks. I mean, we had customers of ours who started making masks very early on. They saw the trend coming. They saw the opportunity. They saw nobody was buying what they were making before, and they saw that there was going to be a demand for PPE. They pivoted within a week or two, and they were fine. They didn't hiccup at all. So, but they were nimble, and they were prepared to be that way. And I think we can all learn a lesson from that for sure. Yeah. Not always easy, but yeah. If you can, you prepare for the worst, right?
Right. But this kind of technology lends itself to, you know, quick turns and being able to set up a machine very quickly. There's really no setup, right. Except for the digital piece behind it. So I think it lends itself well to this.
Yeah.
Those are the questions I have, Scott. You were great, as I knew you would be, because you always have a handle on the business. And I really appreciate your time. And let me just check Facebook to see if there's any questions.
Okay.
No, I don't see any. So
you're going to be easy on me today, huh?
Oh, here's one. If I had 3 chocolate chip cookies and I gave... No, that's different. Never mind. Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate your time. And thank you to the audience. If you ever have any questions about any of this and you didn't have a chance to ask, you could always send me an email. I'll send Scott an email and we'll get an answer for you. But thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much, Mitch, for the opportunity, and nice to meet your audience. Take care.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.